and I do hate it.
This is Barry Tyker of the Oral History Project. It's October 19th, 1992. I'm in the study of Santo Singali.
Steady. I'm not an intellectual. The studio.
Studio. What did I say?
You said steady.
The study.
The study.
The study. We're in the studio. Big difference. We're in the studio, in his studio, and we're going to continue finish up on the interview that we began a couple of weeks ago. In the first interview, we talked a little bit about his background, about his early involvement in the Communist Party, about life on campus in the years immediately following World War II. I'd like to pick up today with, in the early 1950s, Senator Joel McCarthy from Wisconsin started, continued Richard Nixon and others' communist witch hunts, and I'd like to ask Professor Singali how that impacted, if it did at all, on UW and on the art department and on you in particular.
They were around campus, I understood, asking about me. I forget specifically, probably Watrous was one of the guys that they asked about my communist, affiliations, what they knew about it. And some people at the and something at the players, Wisconsin players there in the union. Forgot who the hell. And people in the art department, whoever was chairman. And specifically John Guy. He didn't believe half of what they told about me, and that I probably was still a member of the Communist Party and all that, which I wasn't, for years. So John Guy had kept on protecting me for a while, I don't know for how many weeks, and he finally called me into his office, and there was one other person along with me. And I'd rather not mention his name,
okay,
who also
fine.
Was accused of being a member along with me. And he asked me point blank, he says, were you, or are you, or were you a member of the Communist Party? And why should I lie? Everybody else knew about it. So I says, well, I was a member, all right. As Dale and I, how did I phrase that at the time? I said, well, actually, without mentioning a name, I said, he was only in for a couple months, and it's true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he joined, and he didn't like it, and he left.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was up in for a couple years, probably. And he says, you still got your job. He said, if you had lied and told me that you never were a member of the Communist Party, you'd be out already. And that's all he asked me. He says, when he reminisced, he says, I have a uncle who's a relative of mine who was a socialist. Imagine putting the socialist on the level of communists in those days. It just wasn't to be had. Well, that's how John Guy protected me.
Who was it who was asking about you? Who are the they? Were they
the FBI?
The FBI.
Yeah,
the came.
some people in the FBI going through. I wasn't the only one.
Yeah.
A couple other people around campus were also. I don't know who they were actually, and they also were being asked about. It was just that simple.
Did President Fred ever get involved in any of this?
I don't know.
What about the rest of the campus? You said there were some other people who were in the same predicament
yeah,
as you.
Yeah, I don't know who they are.
Yeah.
Or never knew who they are. I think I knew one by name, and I can't even remember his name, who was even better known than I was. But he went through about the same process that I had been a member, was not a member. And the only way we could answer these people that insisted that once a member, you're always a member, It's, you know, to say you're a Republican one day, you vote Republican one day, the next year you're a Democrat, you know, and or a socialist.
So as far as you know, these FBI people who came pretty much left at that point after John got
they left. But they were around quite a bit because different people would come around and tell me, hey, we were, how about that?
Were you ever interviewed by any of those people directly? By FBI people about your affiliation?
No, that's the funny part.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Two of them came into my lecture room that I had a lecture for my beginning painting groups. Yeah. And I had slides that I would introduce the kids to painting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And be it the funniest thing that ever occurred was I was showing a lot of Orozco's work and Rivera's work, I mean, who were out and out communists. I didn't know anybody. But, you know, these guys you couldn't touch.
Yeah.
Because it was in their artwork that they were communists. You see, the workers' art. And politically, I don't think, I know that Orozco had nothing to do with the communists. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. He was, a person that gave expression to the plight of the poor.
Mm-hmm.
Very definitely poor. To the revolutionaries who fought against these people that were anti-poor people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Rivera was a Trotskyite. That's a splinter group from the, eventually from the communists in Moscow.
Hmm.
The man Trotskyite came from this person who was a political figure in the cause of communism, but they had a lot of infighting between one group and another group within that framework where they were tearing down the structure of the emperor. The whole family was finally literally murdered.
Hmm.
There was no F or not. They went to extremes, and I don't remember a lot of this stuff anymore. Mensheviks, and I wasn't that politically motivated that I can remember these things. They had all these infighting going on, and mm-hmm. being a Trotskyite was one of the infighters or groups that had ideas on how to go on with the revolution, which happened under Lenin. He espoused one direction and Trotsky another direction. Trotsky wanted to go have a world revolution. He didn't want to stop him but one place. Whereas Lenin wanted first the revolution to take place, the worker revolution within Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think he made a deal with the Germans at the time, if I'm not mistaken, in which they got war materials from him. And the war, that was World War 1914-15, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, First World War. And the Germans did supply Lenin with money, with military machinery. Well, anyway, Trotsky had to move fast because they were out to gun him. And he just made it. The Stalin groups were in there too, and Stalin was after him. So he finally landed in Mexico, of all places. And in Mexico, he got in with the worker revolution that was taking place there at the same time. And one day he didn't wake up. They hatched him.
Huh.
And they had an artist by the name of, he's a damn good artist actually. I'll get his name eventually. He was supposedly the one that did the dirty trick of killing Trotsky. Yeah. Oh, great things happened. I was out of that. Small league.
Meanwhile, back on the UW campus during the McCarthy years, do you know if there were other examples of like attempts to censor texts or to punish people for their communist ideology or to purge students from the campus? Who,
here on campus?
Yeah.
No. I don't think any of that happened here.
Yeah, I haven't heard much about it. But
you think that happened?
No, I said I haven't heard much about it.
No, I and a group of other people that had one time or another been a part and parcel of this movement were on campus. And they were out after us. That's mm-hmm. all it amounted. And all of us said at one time or another, quit. We all became Democrats. They didn't believe us.
Did they get anyone on campus? Was anyone fired or anything to your knowledge? Because
not to my knowledge. I don't know. But I was saved just by being honest.
By being honest. Huh?
Yeah. I thought, well, you know, they got the goods on me. Sure I was.
I want to move to one other time in post-World War II history and talk about that for just a few minutes, and that's the student uprisings of the late 1960s. Tell me a little bit about what it was like in the art department. Were you politicized at all in the art department about this? Or?
Oh, yeah. We were, if I remember correctly, a faction grew out of that movement there, a student movement, where they also wanted the persona of teaching. They wanted to teach also. And I looked at this character, you know, he was, it was the first time they came in contact with this group. And they had literature and things like that. And he says, in essence, we believe we're in a position, the more talented people, of teaching art or what history or whatever it may be. And I looked at him, you know, and I said, you asshole, I said, something like that. What are we supposed to do?
Did that silence him?
Yeah.
Was there, were the art students actively involved in the demonstrations? Do you remember that? Or any of the art professors?
No, other than we had the police coming in. Was it the police? No, hell no. It was the soldiers with bayonets.
Oh, the National Guard.
Yeah, they came through the sixth floor of the new building.
The Humanities Building?
Yeah, just, it just gotten started practically that year. And we had moved in from the old building, and they came up way up to the sixth and seventh floors of the Humanity Building, and they sprayed the damn place.
With tear gas?
Yeah, tear gas, and I got an infection in my eye from it. I had to go to a specialist.
Why did they do that?
I don't know. I got in there just that late that the spray was still around. And very few students around. Nothing happened. I mean, you know, there it was. It's they just got a little I don't know. They wanted to do something to make their presence felt, and it was felt. Mm-hmm. And everybody left their damn classrooms, including me.
I didn't realize that the National Guard had actually entered some of the buildings.
Oh, sure. In the art building they did. Yeah. I don't know about the other buildings, though.
Was the some of the departments, the students in the departments, were more involved in the protest movement than others? What was the art department
I don't know.
Significant in any way? That you
I don't think so. Yeah. No.
What they about the faculty? Did you have any faculty members who were actively involved in that movement?
Well, yeah, I won't mention names, but one person who you'd think would never do a thing like this got up. They had a meeting with the art department, this active group, and with their demands and why it was necessary to have this movement. And And this guy gets up, this professor gets up and assures these students that he was one of them. That they had no cause to suspect him of being against students. Well, none of us were against the students, really. I don't know what they wanted to this day.
So their demands, they just sort of gave their demands and left, and that was it?
Petered right out. Yeah. It didn't last long. The rioting lasted a few days.
Do you remember the atmosphere on campus at all around the time when the Sterling Hall bombing occurred?
I don't remember much about it.
Okay. Let's talk for a little bit, moving on to some of the personalities who were in administration and around the campus while you were teaching here. First of all, before we get directly into the personalities, the art department is, for those people who aren't aware of this, is in the School of Education.
We know that.
For the listeners who aren't aware of it. How much contact did you actually have with the School of Education?
We had more contact with assistant deans and occasionally a dean who was very liberal. I remember one dean that I had come in to protest the firing of one of our teachers. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get any further than I am here to protest so-and-so firing, that he just bashed me up and down for having dared to come into his office with this protest. And I left without getting any information, whatever, from him. The guy was fired. And it's strange.
Let's go through the deans individually, and you can make any comments that about them and their mm-hmm. operating style that you're and your encounters with them. You already mentioned John Guy Fawkes regarding the McCarthy.
Well, you understand. I loved him.
Yeah, right. Did you appreciate it, John?
Oh,
Guy?
Sure. I appreciated John very much.
What kind? How would you characterize him as an administrator?
Glove. Very well. As an example, the education building one morning was smoking. Ground floor, you go in and you go through the corridor there from the parking area. You get a picture of the mm-hmm. education building?
I know that.
And John Guy comes around the corner and he says, Zingali? He says, he said, Zingy. I didn't appreciate this. He insisted on referring to me as Zingy. And he says, where's the fire going on? I says, I don't know. He says, well, get on your horse and see where it is.
So you did.
It was smoking. So we went around. It was just smoke from the wood that was burning in the kilns.
Oh, yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, that's right. Several parts. The art department was housed in the education
sure.
building, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. The first two floors. Let's see. We had the basement floors. Then the first floor. We had our studios. And second floor. No, the subfloor. I guess is where the dean's offices
mm-hmm.
were.
Mm-hmm.
As you got came in from. From the stairway going outside, that's where the dean's office was, and the library was there. That's right. Then the second floor was the floors that the education people had.
Mm-hmm.
And we had assemblies on the first floor yet. There. Gee, I haven't been in that building in a long time, have I? And third floor were a mixture. Some people were teaching art, and some people were teaching education courses. I used to listen to. I had the fourth floor there with Diney Mansfield. And I would listen into his classroom right outside. The doorway would be open. And the thesis was on how to throw a screwball.
He was the baseball coach for,
crazy.
For people listening. Yeah. Well, he ended up getting a baseball stadium named after him on the west side. So
he was a nice man.
Yeah, I've heard some very nice things about him. Taking a little sidetrack here, well, since you brought the topic up, I was going to talk about it for a minute later on. And that's facilities for the art department. When you came here right after the war, did you go? Where was your first studio and office located?
How about the journalism building? We can start there.
Where's which building?
It's down. Where the library is.
Where now, Memorial Library is now?
The big library.
Yeah.
Going up the hill.
Yeah.
In there was a yellow brick building, beautiful building, and they knocked it down for make room for this library.
Oh, you mean Helen C. White, the one by the lake, or the main library on by the fountain?
Oh, Helen C. White.
The one on the hill. Yeah. Okay, all right. And you had your first office in there?
Yeah, in that area.
In that area, okay.
Yeah. The first office.
Did you move to the education building from there?
Yeah. Fourth floor.
And you were there for quite a while, weren't
yeah.
you? Yeah. Did you and then you eventually moved to Humanities when it opened. Mm-hmm. So those were your three spaces, the around the journalism building and then
yeah.
education.
I was one of the first ones to move into the education building on the fourth floor there, because it had two rooms way to one side facing there were no windows in it, mm-hmm. actually looking out. And, it was made up of corridor there. Let's see, room in here. Here. And then there's a split here. Platform here. And students were in here. And then a room in here with an opening here, the doorway. And that was a perfect room to teach painting, art on an elementary basis. And Diney Mansfield was over here.
Teaching the screwball.
Yeah. So I had these two rooms. Then Meeker was way over here facing the west with a classroom that he was teaching serigraphy. In the trade, we always would say silk screen.
Oh, okay.
He never liked that. Yeah, so he was in there, and one day he met me going up my stairway here, and he had a lot of graduate students here, and he's, Zingali, he says, how would you like to trade your room for my room? He says, I'm teaching all these graduate students, and I need that space. Words that effect. I said, over my dead body.
End of discussion. Getting back to the School of Ed for a second, Lindley Stiles replaced John Guy Fawkes. Did you have much contact with him?
No, just knew him. We got to know the deans.
Yeah. Well, how would you characterize him?
I don't know. Yeah. No, Stiles, I guess I just have no memory of him at all, John Guy, I have a lot of memories about. His insistence on addressing me as Zingy. I finally got, what are you going to do with the dean?
How did Fawkes treat the art department well?
Very well, yeah. He had to defend the art department. The old guard start spreading this rumor. Now there's a point, you see, and they must have gotten information or were, they might have been questioned by the FBI, for all I know, as to who were the communists in the group, because they started spreading this gossip.
This is the old guard within the art department.
Yeah, the old guard Helen Annan,
yeah,
and Wilson and Stebbins. Stebbins just went along. I mean, yeah, he, nice guy. He would vote along with them and say, you know, he says, I've known him so long. Nice man. But those two started this gossip that I was the head concho communist. And poor Sessler was there with the same gossip. And so John Guy got a hold of this assistant dean. I forgot his name. And he was still looking at the department, the way things are run, and get gossip, pick it up and report to him. So he had nothing to report really particularly, because we go together eating at the Union, mm-hmm, three or four of us at a time, sometimes even more. And then we'd go behind the Bratskeller there, where the steps are,
the Union, the terrace.
The terrace. And we'd make snide remarks about the girls that were half-dressed or too many clothes on or one thing or another. And you should have heard his remarks. I can't remember his name anymore. It was funny. And, well, he had nothing to report. No politics at all.
No politics at all.
Yeah, so when they came back again with more gossip, he said, so-and-so, John White, a communist, he says, let's see, how did he phrase that? That Baptist, Bible-carrying Baptist, a communist, you ladies must be crazy. Nah, get out of here.
End of discussion.
End of the gossip, too.
End of the gossip. Following Stiles, McCarty was dean. Did you know McCarty was dean after Stiles? Did you have any?
No, I didn't have any. Yeah. I don't even remember him. Mm. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Well, obviously, John Guy is the one who made the impression on you.
Oh, yeah. John Guy really made an impression on me.
What about any of the presidents on campus? Before we turn on the tape, you said you really didn't have much contact with them at all. One other thing that happened during the time that you were on campus that directly I suspect the art department was involved in, maybe not, was the building of the LVM Arts Center.
Yeah, we weren't involved.
You weren't involved with that.
John Watrous, Jimmy Watrous is the man that literally built the LVM Museum. You know, he went through a lot of work, visiting a lot of different art history departments, and also, of course, along with that, the LVM Museum, so that he gave the architects a lot of information on what was going to happen in this building. So eventually, of course, when he got a lull and new groups moved in, why, poor Jimmy was without that much to say about the department anymore.
Hmm.
You know, he had been in charge. He was the chairman for a long time in the art history department.
When you guys, we went over this last time, I showed you the roster of the art department and how in 1946 the composition of the art department really changed. All of the veterans and the people came after the war, you and we went through the names of several people. Fred Logan was in there and Sessler and a bunch of others. And you were the Young Turks of the art department more or less in the 40s. Who were the new Young Turks and when did they come around?
New Young Turks were... Well, I suppose you might say they came in with the, I'm trying to think, along with the old Turks, of course you can't forget Anderson, he was part there, and Cole Scott, Who the hell else was in there? Steppet. And, well, Al Sessler was along there, of course. Meeker. Then the calendar group that came in was made up of Ernie Moll. He was a good man, though. Nothing wrong with his involvements. Young man that I can't remember his name. And who are some of the people that were there?
I don't know. I don't know who the new ones were. I was asking you. The point of my question, I guess, is your group of people replaced the people from the pre-World War II era.
Sure, sure.
When did the major
they retired?
When did the major group that eventually replaced you and Anderson and the rest? When did they kind of come in as a group as well?
No, they didn't come in as a group.
They sort of dribbled in,
and then they got enough votes and they ran the department, pretty much. But a story to say about the old group was Mrs. Annan, who had a husband by the name of Annan.
There you go.
Yeah, we always made statements to the effect that he ran the department.
Oh, I see.
She would go with any. When she had some problems, she'd go to her husband, I guess. He was an electrician. And one day, when we were hired, Al Sessler and myself were known as poker players. So they invited us to play poker. And her husband made some anti-Semitic remarks. Without realizing that Al was a Jew.
Interesting.
So Al let him spiel himself out, and then he says, "I'm a Jew." He says, "Do you find me bad, or words that affect this guy?"
What about anti-Semitism? Was that fairly widespread at the university early on?
I don't know. I don't think so.
You can't remember any other examples where people...
No, just... this mentality, they had the mentality for it. No, the university is full of Jews, you know. They're our friends, there aren't enough Italians, that's all.
There you go. What about discrimination? Did you ever see it on campus, like against blacks or against Jews or against women, for example?
No, I don't think so. It wasn't that prevalent at all, at least not among the faculty. I mean, we had fellows on political science. We knew groups, you know, and the two Jews that we knew from political science one became a dean eventually, and the other one was a great friend of mine. I forget his name. Well, there was two there. But then there was a lot of doctors that I played poker with. We have this poker gang that started in 46, maybe even 47.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about that for a minute, because this is kind of interesting. It was outside of the art department then. It was just a lot of different people. How many people were in that organization?
Well, Al and I... they were looking for people. I think they had a young group or a middle-aged group already in session, but they didn't quite have enough for a good hand of poker anymore. I guess some people died out or one thing or another. And around 1947, and they had heard about Al and myself playing poker. I don't know how, but I guess we were playing poker in our homes. And then from there, we started playing poker with him. And then another person that we got along with us was Philip Cohen, who eventually became one of the deans in the med school,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
It's dad now.
Yeah.
He's got he's had about 3 or 4 operations in his head. He's not the same man. Still alive. What was this about?
The poker club.
So this was the poker club. And people would come in, you know, and die out. Now, Clark was one of the guys that came in and prematurely died after about 10 years of being part
from
of
the medical part. School, Clark? That Clark?
Let's see, what was he? I forgot what he did.
Do you know when the club started? You said it was kind of down. 47 is
about
when
46, 47.
So it started right after the war. Was it mainly veterans, or was it just a group of people who got together?
Oh, these were all professional people.
And they just kind of started it? Do you know how it...
No, I don't know how. I was invited.
How many people were in it when it was kind of at its largest...
Well, we got to be 6 and 7 people together. We even had this lawyer... I don't know how he ever got in, because he was he had gone to law school, you might say, and he had this way of prevailing on people. You know, I mean, he'd work his way in. He wanted to join a club; he'd be in the club, and he got caught finally doing some underhanded work for somebody. Forget what it was, and he got disbarred. So then he didn't come around to play poker anymore. But he was a fun guy. Yeah.
Did you play once a week?
Every other week.
Every other week.
Then another club started among the med school. Yeah, they have their own club also. So
poker
they
club.
Yeah, poker club. So they play every week.
Did that start around the same time as yours did? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Did you play for money?
You don't play poker without money. What are you talking about?
What were the stakes like is what I should have said.
Well, I mean, actually, they weren't very high. Now, let's see, what the stakes are, let's see, you got quarter chips, dime chips, half-dollar chips, and dollar chips.
Uh-huh.
One time we had up to a half-dollar. Uh-huh. You lose more money playing up to half a dollar than the high stakes. It's strange.
What was your biggest loss for a night, do you remember?
$25.
What was your biggest winning? About the same?
$99.
Oh, you
won. Where is it? That's my poker table right there.
Oh, there it is.
I went out and bought a poker table.
With the $99?
Yeah.
Did you go from place to place, rotate?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And it was interdisciplinary, so you had people from other departments and whatnot.
Yeah, whoever wanted to play. Yeah. I mean, word of mouth, oh, this guy's a nice guy, let's invite him over. And somebody invite him over when we had 6 players only, and we test him. If we liked him, he was in. Get out of here.
Did you just call yourself the poker club? Was there any particular name you gave yourself or anything like
no.
that?
No.
Did you want to get something? I could detach you there.
Slip of paper up there, see it?
Yeah. You're wired so you can't move here. So
yeah.
Here's your.
That's our poker club.
Oh, you have Skoog in there.
Yeah. Yeah, Skoog. Yeah, Skoog. Yeah, he's one of the last guys to get in. Sometimes we're sorry he's in. Terrible bad. And Stein, he's a youngster, see? And relative of Al Sessler. He's married to Sessler's daughter. And Bill Sewell, he's big stuff.
Yeah.
And Romberg, it's School of Education, isn't he? Robertson, Geography. Eichmann, he's a doctor. He's a pretty slick man. And Cohen, and Bowman. Bowman has retired now. From school, incidentally. Go on, Bromberg, Skoogie, Stein, and Golly. So actually, we're 8 people. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9. We're 9 people.
9 strong.
Well, what happens is 2 guys are out away in winter, Eichmann and Sewell. I guess Eichmann goes down in southern part of Texas, or is it no, Arizona, way down the bottom there where it's warm. And Sewell goes to Hawaiian Islands. He was invited to teach out there.
One of the things I'm interested in is these organizations that sort of informal organizations that just spring up. There were a lot of dining clubs, for example, around campus where people from different departments would get together once a month and just dine together and talk about university issues, things like that. Were there any other things that you were involved in like this besides the poker club?
That was enough.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. I'm glad we stumbled upon that. I would have never asked you otherwise. We're going to switch now. I think we might have enough room on this side. Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about your career. I was going through the UW publications doing some background research on you, and a couple of the articles on you about you or about your career stated that you worked early on in terms of your artwork, I'm talking now, with social and political themes ranging from, quote, the condition of Negro life to immigrants fleeing air raids in the Spanish-American War. Talk about your early artwork in terms of social.
Yeah, first painting over there, my early art.
Now don't move because you're fucked up here. Oh yeah.
Pretty dark and gloomy.
Is that the people fleeing?
Yeah.
Air raid. And when were you painting those types of paintings? What years were those? Do you remember?
Isn't there a date on that thing?
Let me go over and check.
Get that painting over there. See it in between?
Right here?
No, to the right. In between the two paintings.
Oh, yeah.
There. Take that out. I have to repair that. Nothing in there?
No.
How about in the back?
Oh, there's something. Air Raid Spain, 1937.
Yeah, that was it.
Was your social and political themes... did that sort of parallel your activity in politics, your
sure.
communist? When did that change? Did it change? When did it change? And what
well,
did it change to?
Well, it didn't change like that.
Yeah.
You know.
How did it evolve, essentially? Could you characterize it?
Very difficult to, isn't it?
Yeah. I understand that.
But yeah. Well, going to Rome alone changed me.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Yeah. This thing here, over here, and on the stairway downstairs, those things were attributed to the subject matter of the Roman ruins, like that. But even before that came the factories that I did along the way back there. See it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Watch your head on the ceiling.
Oh, yeah. One of the publications also noted, summarizing your art career, may have been articles from the Milwaukee Journal or something like that, I'm not sure, that you did a lot of landscape, the Roman thing. You also did southwestern landscapes?
Yeah. There. Right in front of you. Sort of surreal.
Yeah. Kind of Bryce Canyon-y?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You hit it.
Yeah.
But in between, I did this big painting, Tricks or Treat, no politics there at all.
That's great. I like that one. Did you ever do any of the real abstract paintings that were
no.
popular?
It wasn't my meat.
Were there people in the art department who did that?
Not too many.
They're
always figurative one way or another.
Okay.
Yeah. I think... for a while, Colescott was fairly abstract, where it was difficult to tell the subject matter. But he's a very talented man. And now he's done, he got into a political scheme of things.
Hmm.
You know, he makes, how should I say it? He's somewhat of a... person that digs at political figures and
Satirist type?
Satirist, yeah, that's the word I was, mm-hmm. you know, he's quite a satirist. Meeker, of course, is, he hasn't changed really. Mm-hmm. He's very glib in his what he does. He has a tremendous amount of ability to do things. He made it. He once made a statement to the effect that he was making more money outside the university than in the
through his painting.
Sure, yeah. He had a agent that took care of his business, yeah. And all he had to do was make a lot of prints.
So he was commissioned or sold a lot of prints through his agent.
Yeah, very many prints. Yeah, and he used to hire students to help him.
Ah.
He had a real factory going on. He's got a big studio out west of Highway 12, next to a little lake there. And there was a brand new building that he built for a big studio. And it's a factory to make silk screens.
I'm going to turn the tape. Last time when I was here, you took me for a little tour of your house, and I saw some of the many wonderful drawings, sketches you had. One of the people that really impressed me was Al Sessler. Could you talk about his work for a moment, if you could?
Oh, Al? Well, I wish I had his reputation.
And he did what? What was his main?
Mostly, let me put it this way. He was a terrific painter. I mean, we used to have a studio together, and he'd... have the table to paint on, and always about this size.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be 10 feet away from him, and I'd have paintings that big.
Oh, that's right. You told me in Milwaukee, didn't you do the murals, and he did the little postage stamp type things?
Yeah. That was funny.
That was great.
So he was very talented,
yeah.
And he died too young. We were trying to get him to do something about his high blood pressure. The damn fool just wouldn't do a thing about it. And in fact, he chased his son-in-law out of the house, or threatened to, if his son-in-law didn't stop
pestering him
and take care of himself. Yeah. He just wouldn't do it. He felt that he was, nothing could hurt him.
Yeah.
But he had to take drugs, pills, and one thing or another, or... He didn't take them, I guess. That was it. He wouldn't go to a doctor. But he did a lot of work in lithography.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a whole bunch of his stuff downstairs.
Yeah, I saw it. It was really
well, those
very,
are his work.
Very nice. Very impressive. When did he die? How old was he? Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember. First time, let's see, just as I came back from Europe, my first time that I was in Europe in 63. And I was home just as school opened. His classes weren't running yet.
Hmm.
And the secretary said, introduced herself and says, Al has died.
Oh boy. What a shock. What about any of your students? Did any students... Do you remember any of your students in particular, as special students?
Oh, sure.
And since some of them go on to have successful careers, could you talk about one or two of those that just come to mind?
Well, we got one lady that, couple ladies. One of them was here just from Washington, I think. I forget her name. That's a hell of a do. She's married now. Yeah. And then there's another one that lives in Madison here. But she's gone into... another media. She does work with the photograph. The
photography.
Yeah. Well, she makes something to do with thematically. I don't quite remember what it is. But then there's a couple of students here and there that have made it fairly big. Names don't register anymore.
In terms of right now, what are you painting now? What kind of things are you looking at now?
They're right behind you.
The two right out here.
Huh?
These two right here?
Yeah, he's actually just across the street, across the way from me. I use that as subject matter.
They're paintings of houses,
trees.
And trees and water.
Well, it's more than water, and then the color scheme. It's much more colorful than I generally work with. And this has to do with the same house, but with the imagery of the trees reflected.
In the windows.
Yeah. And I got to show that little person in the window is my neighbor next door that lives in that house. I didn't put any clothes on her, and she hasn't seen it yet.
That'll be interesting to see what her reaction is.
And I've done this. I collect a lot of Indian, they're all downstairs.
We looked at them last time, the Kachinas and some of the other.
So I've made paintings like that. This is all contemporary that I got here.
Yeah, that's the, I like those. Those Kachinas are really quite extraordinary. What about the future? Do you have any other ideas that you're...
let me take it easy.
Take it easy.
I have to live yet.
Any advice or any words of encouragement or whatever that you'd like to pass on to any young artist who might listen to this tape someday?
Don't listen to me.
Do you have any other remarks you'd like to?
That's it.
Okay. Well,
I'd rather my work does my talking.
Okay. I would agree with that 100%. And any of you who get the opportunity to see his work, I would strongly advise that you do it. This is Barry Tyker. This interview is over.
Are we done? We're good.